We asked people to describe the world of work in 2025 in one word.
Okay, so I'm here at the office and I am going to be asking some people what they think of work in 2025. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. Okay, work 2025, don't overthink it.
Ever evolving.
Fast paced.
Non-stop.
How do you feel about work in 2025?
I mean, I wish I could be a housewife in this day in my life. 2025 to be specific.
It's wild.
That's wild.
Intriguing.
Why?
There's always something that just like happens that makes you realize that you actually don't know what you're doing.
And well, we got a variety of answers and many couldn't describe it in just one word. Hey, Brendan.
Yep. Feels like this is a hot topic and a complex question.
Mm.
And maybe because the workplace is more complex and demanding than it ever has been before.
Yeah.
I think we're all aware of stuff like quiet quitting, and there's been so much talk in the media about
so
how people are feeling about
words.
Work.
Mm. Yeah.
But it kind of indicates that there's a whole lot of shifts, these seismic shifts that are all happening at once and all kind of colliding, making this arguably the most challenging time for workers in human history.
Yeah.
I have a good stat that actually illustrates this.
Mm-hmm.
So according to Gallup, they do the State of the Global Workplace report, and their one for 25 just came out.
Okay.
And employee engagement fell last year in 2024, costing the world's economy an estimated $438 billion.
Oh,
yeah, that's a lot. That's
a
more,
lot of dollars.
That's more than Elon Musk is worth, like quite substantially more than Elon Musk is worth.
Wowzers.
But like, if you think about it, and also like the scary part of the statistic was that the drop off was equal to the decline seen during the COVID-19, during the pandemic.
Yeah, like when we were all in absolute upheaval and the world was going through like this massive event.
Exactly. So workers are as disengaged like right now as they were when we were all sheltering in place or locked up at home and kind of walking around in our jammies.
Wild.
Yeah, what is going on?
What is going on?
Yeah.
These are some really interesting things I think we've both been pondering, Bea. And we're going to be unpacking this in great detail in this episode. But I think let's first tell the people who we are. I'm Carol Williams. I'm an executive audio producer and head of audio at Two Stories. Two Stories is where we both work. And
It is.
And is a content-led marketing agency based in Cape Town. I've been in branded podcast creation for around 8 years. And I've probably made over 500 episodes by now. It's something I love. I love audio. I'm a muso as well. Anything to do with audio and storytelling, I am there. But tell us about yourself, Brendan.
So yeah, I've been in magazines and media for a long, long time. Was editor of Sports Illustrated, a couple of other men's mags. But I've also kind of found my passion in internal communications. It's such a fascinating subject. People, like the world of work is just always interesting, continues to be interesting and continues to evolve. So internal communications is my sort of sweet spot content-wise and what I focus on at Two Stories.
Mm, amazing. Yeah, and I think a space where we can add real value to people's lives. And I think businesses often think about their outward-focused communication, but I know you're very passionate about making sure that the same amount of care and attention is given to internal comms.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a huge missed opportunity. You see brands spending all of their money and their time and their resources in talking to their customers. But arguably, their staff are even more important. And yeah, that's what we're going to be unpacking today.
We're going to unpack, absolutely. Just to give you a note as a listener of this episode, you're going to be hearing a few snippets from conversations we've had with various professionals over the last few months. These snippets are anonymous, and we've also included them to give you a bit of context to what we're saying. I think it's important that we reflect the greater dynamic going on rather than us just going on about this. So that's just a note on some of the snippets that you have already heard and the ones that you're going to be hearing throughout the course of this conversation.
Cool. And also just a caveat from my side is obviously that the subject matter that we're dealing with today concerns desk-based work environments more than frontline work environments. I think the frontline is also fascinating and probably room for a whole podcast of its own.
Yeah.
And the need for much more research to be done into our frontline workers and their needs. But today we're focusing on desk-bound slaves like ourselves who sit in front of computers mainly and are sort of so-called knowledge workers.
Yes, knowledge workers. And
it's a bit
I'm
of a patronizing term.
But what, a knowledge worker?
Yeah.
I like being called a knowledge worker. It makes me feel superior, which...
Okay.
Okay, so let's get into it. As we mentioned earlier, we're going to be diving into the world of work of 2025 and especially looking at things like employee engagement. And I've got a few questions for you, Brendan. So one of the things that we've heard a lot about in the voice notes, and I think this was so interesting because we did a call out for voice notes a few months ago, and the response was quite rapid.
It was amazing.
Like, it was amazing.
People have got stuff to get off their chest.
They do. And it was kind of like, oh, here's someone who's asking me a question and no one else is asking me this. So I'm going to like send them a 6-minute voice note, which we really appreciate to the people.
The and some of them were like 18 minutes. Yeah. People have got a lot to say.
And I think this shows, I think, just what a big topic this is. And I think that one of the really interesting things that came out was that it feels like there's been a loss of joy in the workplace.
While these stats on workplace engagement, these most recent findings are pretty depressing, they're not surprising to me anyway. And in fact, I find them kind of validating because it's something I've experienced so much and have been grappling with a lot over the last few years. But it just seems to have got a whole lot more acute. Like I've become more acutely aware of it recently, like probably over the last year or so. And it's been quite hard for me to sort of acknowledge, really, that if I'm honest, this period in my career, like these last few years since COVID, but more so, like more recently over the last year or so, has probably been the least joyful that my work life has ever felt in my like 25-year career, which is really sad. Work used to be such a source of joy and fun and friends, you know, and I know I'm not alone in this, because a lot of my peers and colleagues are sort of at the same stage of their careers and the same age, feel the same. Like we used to have these really full, rich work lives. And I'm not saying that, you know, that was necessarily for the best from a work productivity or efficiency point of view, but it certainly was from a like human connection point of view.
What do you think this voice note is highlighting?
I mean, there's so much to unpack here. And I think that there's so much that's touched on, but words like least joyful, work having been a source of joy, fun and friends, that like this all really resonated with me. I found this clip made me quite emotional. It's really sad that people are not finding joy in their work. Anymore. I mean, I think I'm lucky. I find a lot of joy in my work, but I also empathize with this sentiment. And we've heard this a lot, like all the people we've been speaking to and all the research I do, it just keeps coming up. Employees are seriously questioning, like, why do I get up and do what I do every day? They're dissatisfied. They definitely are suffering from a lack of real connection. And that makes sense. I mean, we all used to be in an office together. And as antiquated as that kind of sounds nowadays in a sort of flexi time work from home environment, there was joy in that. There was something
connection.
I also remember, like, I think the point that was made by the speaker here is about friends is a really valid one.
What do you think is one of the biggest problems in the world of work right now? So we've like highlighted this aspect of like maybe a lack of joy, a lack of friendship, but like what is the nub of it? Like, what are we really dealing with?
I mean, it just feels like it's all gotten a bit much.
Yeah,
like the stats out there around how many meetings people are in, like that's almost doubled since the pandemic. 78% of workers feel that they are attending far too many meetings.
Yeah.
Also, just think about the amount of time that we all spend with information, consuming information. One of the stats that I saw is that the average global consumer spends about 82 hours per week. That's 69% of your waking hours with info. Yeah. Like, also, if you look at the screen time stats globally, we're seeing screen time just going tickling up and up and up. And interesting point, South Africans are the worst in the whole world. We spend more time on screens than anybody else.
I think
it's like something like 9 hours, 24 minutes.
Is
our average, whereas the global average is 6 hours, 43 minutes. So we're well above the mean.
Well above that, yeah.
So it's just like we've got so much going on. It's complex, like this acronym VUCA that had been around for a while, volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous. It's all of those things.
Yeah.
And it's really hard.
So for me, the next big question that we need to tackle, and, you know, for some people, this one might be really obvious and to others, maybe less so. Why do employees matter? Like, I think there's been a massive shift in the world of work around this. You know, I think like maybe our grandparents' generation or our parents' generation, it was kind of like you got a job and you did the job and you didn't really ask too many questions. You maybe did that job for 30 to 50 years and then you got a gold watch and a handshake and then you were stoked, you know? But that has changed significantly. So I guess, like, why do employees matter?
So, I mean, obviously there's a lot to be said there, but if you just look at the bottom line of the matter, companies that have engaged employees outperform their peers. Like, there are a lot of very reputable Harvard Business Review, MIT type level studies that make a direct correlation between engaged employees or employees who feel connected in their workplace and things like return to shareholders, profitability. It also connected employees are absent far less often, are sick far less often, are obviously happier, work harder, etc. So, like, I think the statement effective employee engagement drives business growth is a fact, not just an opinion. But then there's also like the human side of it. Like, obviously that's the bottom line thing, but the human side of it is like we all want to get along and have fun and be doing something that we care about.
Yeah.
The more that brands recognize that right now, it's no stretch to say that this is probably the most important time to get your internal comp strategy right that we've ever had. And thinking seriously about where your workers are currently and at all, like what the future holds, and taking seriously some of these quite scary statistics that are floating around there about disengagement, so that you can try and do something about it and try and reconnect.
Yes, absolutely. Because I think I agree. I think sometimes you get a little bit like paralyzed, you know, when you hear all these stats. I can only imagine as business leaders what that must feel like, because you're already dealing with like a lot of economic uncertainty. You're dealing with a lot of pressures from stakeholders and all sorts of things. And I think in some ways it would be easy to go, okay, but the people who work here should just be grateful they have work. You know, and like, we don't need to think too much about this, because honestly, they can go somewhere else if they are not happy.
Yeah. And I mean, in organizations I've worked in, helping them with internal communications, managers have had those attitudes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't go down well.
It doesn't work.
Or, yeah. Like, without fail, in organizations where that attitude to staff is prevalent, you have unhappy people. And the reality is that people who are unhappy in their work will try less hard, but also it erodes things like pride, loyalty, collaboration, innovation. So like really, really something that we need to be hearing and taking more seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. Something that was in one of the other voice notes, which we haven't included in the podcast, but that really struck me, was this idea of having like a team and part of the or some of the team members being really engaged and then carrying the rest of the team members who are not as engaged. And I think that dynamic does happen as well, you know, where it's, you know, so it's also not just seeing people as individuals within organizations, but seeing them as team members within organizations, and those teams are actually what make your organization function well or not.
Yeah.
And obviously, inevitably, if it's like the same as, you know, in high school when you did group work and then like everyone got the same mark, that felt like really unfair. But eventually those people who are kind of upholding the standard and trying really hard and very engaged, they're going to either burn out.
Yeah.
Or they're going to, you know, they're going to be headhunted by someone else and you're going to lose them. And then you're sitting with a very disengaged team without the people who are like keeping things ticking over and going. And that's also like a really bad place to be in.
It is, like, absolutely. And there was a really interesting study that was done. It was kind of like 6 months into the pandemic where they looked at productivity. And what that study found, I can't remember who it was by, but the study found there was a cohort of workers who were keeping productivity levels high. Actually, productivity levels went up in the early part of the pandemic because of this sort of super achievers like getting on it and making stuff happen.
Yeah.
But they obviously burnt out. And then you saw productivity levels come plummeting down. We want to avoid that.
Absolutely. So up next, we've got another little sound snippet that speaks to some other interesting points. Let's take a listen.
So I think people who are in remote working jobs, I think there's a little bit of Groundhog Day that's set in, where I think there is a complacency and they don't understand the engagement. I think the Gen Zers that we all complain about, who are putting mental health or think they're putting mental health above responsibilities at work. What's happened is they've lost out on connection. They've lost out on learning in office by osmosis. They don't have the connection, the human connection, mentorship, support that they would normally have gotten almost around the water cooler. And they don't feel that they can ask questions freely, because it kind of involves, you know, reaching out to someone via text or reaching out to someone on Teams. So I think that's definitely going to catch up with all of us.
I don't know about you. I learned everything I know about work from being in the work, in a workplace, and spying on other people and kind of watching what they did and then doing it myself.
Being in meetings.
Learning via,
senior people.
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of sympathy for the Gen Zs who are coming into the workplace. They're sitting like they don't know people yet, but they're on Teams calls with them. But everyone's got their damn camera off. They're sitting in their jammies in their bedroom. It's just not a vibe. I would feel very hard done by and freaked out if I was joining the workplace now.
Yeah.
In our current context.
Yeah, and kind of maybe feeling a bit torn between the ideal of like flexible working and actually maybe what you really need or want. And maybe not even knowing, because if you have never experienced it, how would you know?
I personally think that we've made a devil's bargain here. We have sacrificed connection for convenience. Mm. And if you think of old Maslow and his hierarchy of needs, connection is right at the top.
Yeah.
Convenience is right down the bottom. I hear this often. People are like, I don't want to sacrifice being able to pick up my kids, go fetch my laundry, work in my jammies for being in an office. But if you really think about that, like, is that as important as like feeling connected to other human beings? I don't think so.
And maybe it's not a case of like either or. Maybe it's having a both and, because, you know, I think again, it really depends who you are. Like if you may be a single parent or something like that, being included in the workforce because you can work from home is obviously a big deal.
Yeah.
But I think like,
isn't that why it's so complex? Because
it
like,
is,
it's,
exactly.
It's like, I don't want personally, I don't want to go back to the office five days a week.
You don't want to be mandated to do that. Yeah.
But at the same time, if that happened, I'd get used to it in 3 months and I'd be back. You know what
okay.
I mean? I would be okay. But I also get that like for some people, it's a deal breaker. And that's just what we have to live with now, because that genie's kind of out the bottle. Like we can't put it back now.
Yeah.
But there are very diverse feelings about work from home, remote work. People who aren't able to do it are resentful. Like it's a bigger issue than I think we recognize it as to be.
That we're flagging right now. Yeah. So something that is really fascinating to me is around the cost of disconnection. Okay. And I don't just mean, obviously the human cost is really important, but there's a business or fiscal cost as well. And I think like, you know, if you... because all of us are motivated by different things. I am someone who's motivated by the human aspect of things.
Me too.
But I also understand there are people who are not, that's like less important, and maybe, and also probably because of their job and because of what they need to do, they need to think about the business costs. And I think like we did kind of mention this a bit earlier, but what's really interesting is that there's a direct correlation between these two things. Disengaged employees contribute to an 18% reduction in productivity, okay, which is huge. The cost of replacing a staff member can be up to 200% of their annual salary, dependent on their role. So when we are like talking big or like sort of seniors, higher ups, that's a huge amount of money that you've got to outlay.
And the hassle of having to read 10,000 CVs for management.
Yes, absolutely. And then disengaged employees can make 60 to 100 times more errors than engaged colleagues. So even when someone is sitting there in their desk, maybe they're not that person who's going to be a risk taker and leave. They're just going to stay there and be disengaged.
Quiet quitters,
yes. I mean, that obviously will lead to a significant loss in productivity and that will lead to financial setbacks. So something else that came out of research that I know you shared with me is that between overflowing inboxes and calendars packed with meetings, the average manager now spends 69% of their waking hours consuming information. I mean, that is just wild.
It's wild.
Wild. So yes, like this all has a cost. This all has not only a human cost, but a financial cost. And I also don't think those two things are different. They're the same thing.
So here's a scary, well, interesting stat for me, that actively disengaged workers who are obviously emotionally disconnected from their work experience have higher level of stress daily than unemployed people.
Sure.
So it's worse for your mental health to be disengaged at work than it is to be
unemployed. That's so hectic.
I mean, that is quite hectic. Ultimately, what's happening here is that employees are increasingly overloaded and they're increasingly tuning out our attempts to communicate with them.
Mm.
And when that happens, you've got a problem, because how do you build things like culture, belonging, loyalty? Mm. How do you drive a sense of connectedness if no one's actually paying attention?
Brendan, I think all of these things are true. And I think our next voice note highlights all of that.
On internal communications, I think the greater crisis for me is a lack of connection, because I think communication void of connection falls flat to some degree, and that causes divisions, silos, factions, etc. Or that contributes greatly, maybe not causes, but contributes greatly to those divisions, etc. And what organizations can do, or what I think organizations can do, I think an intention and a recognition that you need to build a culture, and effective communication doesn't just happen because we can talk or we send each other emails or we have meetings even. But that comes as a result of some level of intent, or a great deal of intent, you know. So I think, having an intention, you know, to build that culture, number one, and two, then having one or two things, maybe three, that you can point to as an organization to say, these are the things that we're doing in order to build a connected team. And probably more important are mechanisms, you know, that can help an organization gauge or measure or reflect, you know, to say that, is this working out? Is it serving the vision? Is it serving the people that we're working with?
So something that stands out for me here is around intention and then mechanics. Like, what is the intention of internal comms, and then how do you do it? I'd love to hear your thoughts on those two things.
I'm fascinated by some ideas in systems theory.
Mm.
So the idea of positive feedback loops.
Yes.
Essentially that, like, if a good intention in an organization can snowball, gain momentum, and then set off a chain of other positive occurrences, right?
Yes.
And I think that if the intention of your organization is that we really are trying to hear our staff, we really are trying to get through to them, and we're trying to find effective ways of communicating, not just pushing information at people, but effective ways of communication is two-way, of listening, of hearing, and of responding, then you're already ahead of the curve there. Like, you're already an organization that is making an effort. So intention is absolutely important. But then you need a plan. Like, okay, how are we going to do this? Is sending more emails to people with flooded email inboxes going to break through? Is that really, like, is that the best plan?
Mm.
One of the things that I know that has happened during the pandemic and post is just bolting on so many more digital channels that we've got all these channels that we're all, like, we're on Slack, WhatsApp, Teams.
Yeah.
They're all pinging at the same time. Sometimes people are pinging you about the same thing on different devices. It's like, it's chaos. We need to start thinking, okay, we've got the intention. I think most organizations do. They understand the importance of their staff and they want them to be happy and connected.
Mm.
But are we doing the right things to make that happen?
Yes.
Is plonking a whole lot of internal communications content on a hard-to-reach intranet that is only accessible when you're in the office IT environment the best way of doing this? No.
Yeah.
So we need to, I think about how we communicate in our contemporary reality.
Yes, be more strategic as well.
Be more strategic, and also, as we mentioned earlier, apply the same kind of rigor, aesthetics, and excellence to your internal marketing as you apply to your external marketing.
Mm, that's so great. And I think to mention something that blew me away, it takes people generally somewhere around like 59 minutes or like an hour to find information, internal comms information on different channels.
Yeah, because they're going like, which channel was this on again? Was that on Slack or was that on Teams?
Oh my gosh. And
I've been there. You've been there.
I've been there, yes. Mm-hmm. But it's like That, I mean, you just think, again, from a productivity point of view, if people are spending 59 minutes of their day looking for something from
you, something's wrong.
There's something wrong.
Yeah.
And even if it's maybe not as long in your organization, maybe because you're smaller or something like that, the fact that it's not clear where that information is. And like you say, we speak a lot in B2B and B2C spaces about breaking through the clutter and breaking through the noise, and yet seem to forget that it's also a human being on the other side of your internal comms.
Yeah, I mean, you're sending out internal communications messaging to generally to people's cell phones, right? When you're on somebody's cell phone, you're competing with the entire world's media,
yeah.
TikTok, you're competing with Wordle, you're competing with all the other things they could be doing on their device at that time rather than reading your message. So unless you're making your message engaging, entertaining, break through the clutter-esque, you're just going to get buried by the avalanche of consumption of information that everybody is up to all the time.
Yeah, it's almost like thinking about something that we talk about at Two Stories is being audience-led.
Yeah.
And I think that is so key. And maybe it's more obvious when you're thinking in terms of content for your actual audience that you think, but it's like, how would you approach your internal comms differently if you were audience led?
Well, here's a scary stat. Only 34% of organizations in the world measure the efficacy of their internal comms.
Wow.
In other words, are actually tracking it.
Mm.
Now that's just insane.
Mm.
Like, if you're sending out messaging, you need to know whether it's getting through or not. That's quite indicative of this sort of almost like, we'll have to send some stuff to our staff. Let's just tick that box.
We know that it's the right thing to do.
Rather than an intention that is like, how are we going to fit into their lives more easily? How are we going to have relevance, relentless relevance?
Mm.
How are we going to make this a bit fun? Because gosh only knows, we don't need a 2,000 word emailer with no pictures from the CEO about things that are on his mind. But how do we kind of show up in our employees' lives with some understanding of their context and provide them stuff that's going to actually be useful and fun.
In terms of like a business, how do you think trust gets built?
Right now, 98% of companies are saying that the most effective form of communication they have is when their leaders stand up and speak live to real human beings.
Wow.
And the second most effective, one percentage point below that, is when they do that via Teams.
Mm.
So having your leaders stand up and talk
virtually
or in IRL, you can't say in IRL.
No, just say
IRL.
In real life.
Just IRL, after in real life, is the most effective way. And that also makes sense. Like, right. Mm. Like,
it goes back to that connection thing. I mean, again, this is not rocket science, but I think we sometimes complicate it.
And we're kind of like, okay, there's a sexy new channel. Let's rush to get to do that.
Yeah.
When staff are actually saying, I just want to understand what's going on and why you've bought this company, made this merger, why we're letting people go. Like, give me the why part. I'm an adult, and then I'll understand where we're at, and then I will understand why decisions I'll be making. I think that's something that we need to focus on. So, yep, Carol, you and I have been chatting like for a year now, I think, about how our two interests and disciplines are kind of converging with your interest in audio and the amazing statistics that we're seeing in terms of South Africans' adoption of things like podcasts, and my discipline, internal comms, how they're converging and how there's actually a lot of opportunity for audio in the internal communication space.
Yes, absolutely.
But talk to me a bit about why you love audio so much and how you think it offers something in the face of everything that we've been hearing today.
You know, I think audio is such a fantastic tool. Obviously, we've seen a lot of growth in the podcasting space just generally, like let's say over the last, I don't know, like 10 years. It's a media format that is continuing to grow in popularity. I think there's a few reasons why it has. And I'm talking now, let's talk about our favorite podcast. Like why?
Bansplain.
There we go. Like, why do you love listening to that? Why is it downloaded on your phone and you listen to it at the same time every week? Mine is like The Rest is History, because I'm a history nerd and I love The Rest is History. Yeah, totally. But the reason why I listen to every single episode of that show is a few things, and they link completely to what we've just been talking about. Firstly, it's interesting. It speaks to...
Entertaining.
It's entertaining. Yeah. It speaks to something that I find interesting and that I would happily spend an hour of my life listening to. the way that the shows are put together are really smart. They're really considered. They definitely have got their target audience in mind. They know the history nerd audience well. They know the kinds of things that are going to be interesting. They research the topics. They have a great community. So they have a way of the audience feeding back. They sometimes do lives where the audience can watch and comment in real time. And they, you know, answer questions. They've also started doing some live shows. So
it's quite an immersive, like, rich experience.
Exactly. The sound design, the humor, the hosts are really great. And if we translate that into what we've been talking about, it's the way that the communication is put together is well thought out. It's very considered. It's very targeted. And it makes sense for the audience.
Aren't there also stats about recall being higher if you listen rather than read?
So absolutely. 59% of podcast listeners say that they listen to podcasts more than they use social media, which wow. I think is quite interesting. And then they also say that they retain 15% more information compared to those who read articles. So, you know, I think, again, there's something quite fascinating for us to think about there in terms of using audio in the internal comm space. But it's not doing it in a way that is like boring and interesting.
Not an email read.
No, it's not like someone, you know, a computerized voice or a robotic voice, like reading your email that people aren't opening and then expecting them to listen to it. You know, it's kind of, it's using all of the elements of audio, which is like what I get so excited about, you know.
Like sound design.
And like using voice snippets, you know, like we've done in this podcast where we've actually brought in other voices and they're not in the studio with us. That was done over WhatsApp, you know. Yeah. And the richness of conversation that we both had with those people who sent us voice notes because we were asking the right questions. I think those are just like small little bits of why this medium can work so nicely. And, you know, there are some great case studies of brands that have used audio in their internal comms, where they've used podcasting specifically in their internal comms. And I think what also is really cool about this is that, and I'll kind of briefly go through some of these case studies, but what's cool is that it shows how many different ways you can use it, you know. And I think what you were saying earlier about like understanding your channels and understanding your messaging, which is something that is so obvious when you're talking to a consumer, but maybe less obvious when you're talking to your employees, that really comes through, I think, in these brands that have used internal comms podcasts to really great effect. So the first one I want to tell you about is from American Airlines. They've got a podcast called Tell Me Why. It's currently in its 7th season, so it's been going for a while now. And I also love the fact that they use the language of podcasts, which season. Yeah. It's not just ongoing. It's like season one, season two, you know.
Right. So they're getting into the medium. And yeah, Tell Me Why is also like, that really does spell it out for you.
Yes. So this podcast is by Leadership on American Airlines. And basically, they use the podcast to explain why they've made certain decisions, maybe why they've changed certain flight routes, why they've made certain acquisitions, why, basically just a
stuff
space
that management are doing, they tell people why.
Why, exactly.
That's a very good idea.
Very cool. And for them, the results have been really great. So they say that they have a more informed workforce and a culture of openness where employees better understand why decisions are made. And I think that goes back to what we were speaking about earlier, this why culture and intent is so important, because they feel dialed in.
Yeah, that, I mean, you're also being treated like an adult, right? Yeah. Like, here, we'll explain these big decisions that we've made to you transparently because we know that you will then kind of get it. That makes a lot of sense.
And the other thing that I love about this one is that you're thinking, okay, I'm guessing that they have staff all over because they're an airline.
Yeah.
And so you're also allowing people to engage with the content when they can. So they might be listening, you know, just before a flight, if they're a pilot. So they might be listening while they're on a layover.
Hopefully not while they're flying.
Landing, well, yeah. I mean, doesn't the airplane fly itself?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know.
Pilots
don't want to test
hate
that
me.
Theory.
But yeah, so you're kind of giving people the autonomy
to engage when
when they can.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And also on a medium that doesn't mean they need to be at a laptop. You know, they can get it on their phone. And
good point. So they actually, like, podcasts are a way around screen time.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I haven't thought of it that way.
Yes, and you don't have to give your, especially if it's audio, you don't have to give your visual attention, which is really cool. So the second one that I wanted to talk about is the Warner Bros. Leadership Edge. So this podcast brings the real unfiltered conversations with company leaders straight to the employees' ears. I really like this one. I'm sure this one would feel a little bit risky, maybe. It's like, you know, all these conversations that mostly your top level leadership are privy to, and now you're actually opening the door for other people to hear those.
But how wonderful. I mean, how great for staff. The leadership who would be open to doing something like that tells me that those the leaders I can walk into the office of and say, hi, I've got this problem.
Got a problem, you know. Yeah. And what they have found is that it's a powerful way to make leadership feel more human and relatable, which I also think goes back to so much of what we've said prior to this. And then it's also reinforcing, they use it to reinforce the values of the Warner Bros. Culture, which is cool. Like, you think about seeing these are our values, maybe on a poster somewhere, or like on a website or on an intranet, versus hearing it in action in conversations with the people who are leading the organization. I mean, like, that is a completely different experience.
It's going to be more engaging and
Yeah, absolutely. And then the last one that I want to mention, this is probably
one of... KFC?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one I do know about. I've kind of looked into this fascinating one. Go ahead.
So this is kind of one of my favorite ones because it was an employee-led content play, which I think is so fun, where brands actually give their employees the opportunity to be part of creating content for the rest of the brand. And again, very much internal. And one thing I just want to say is that these podcasts are not available to the public.
Right. Yeah, obviously.
They are only available. So for anyone listening who's like thinking, oh, this...
Don't put my company secrets out on the internet. Yeah.
It's not there. And there's a way that you can still use listening platforms, but having unlisted channels so no one else can find them. But yes, so this one I love because it was an employee-led exercise. It was hosted by someone who was employed at KFC UK. And this podcast was really around raising awareness of diversity, inclusion, and origin. And so this team recognized that podcasts had the potential to encourage genuine open conversations, celebrate diversity, and promote open dialogue. So they actually love this. They built a soundproof studio at their offices.
Yeah, that's taking it seriously.
Yes. And I mean, imagine what that communicates to your team. It's like, we really want to hear your stories. And because we really want to hear your stories, we're going to create this
We've built an actual studio for you to talk in.
Exactly. Yeah, and so, yeah, they covered different topics. They had different employees having conversations, all hosted by an employee.
What was it called?
The podcast is called United by the Bucket. So you can also see how they...
Playful.
It's playful. And then they also brought in the brand, you know, which is really cool. Any parting thoughts?
Well, yes. I mean, I think, like, the things that struck me during the process of doing this is, firstly, that there is a problem. Like, the research shows that all the reading that you do shows it. But when you actually open the door to ask people how they're feeling about work, they have feelings. There's a problem. Internal comms, as we said, can't fix all of the problems, but it can certainly help people in some of the most important relationships that they have in their lives, which are their work relationships. The thing that it seems to me that we've lost is connection. Like, that word just came up. It comes up again and again and again. And exactly how we reconnect is obviously complex. But certainly talking about things openly and honestly, hearing the actual voices of leaders in the form of podcasts, which feel to me like a very good idea and something that all organizations should be trialing right now. That's how we start to sort of claw back some ground here.
Brendan, I absolutely agree. We can do better. And thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you. It was fun.
It's been great to just chat. So we talk about this stuff a lot. But I think just consolidating it into a conversation has been really...
Yeah,
really great. And thank you to you, our listener, for joining us today. We hope you found this insightful. Are you thinking about expanding your organization's audio offering or your internal comms strategy, perhaps? Or maybe after this, you're thinking that an internal comms podcast is just what you need. We would love to talk to you. So pop us a mail at hello@twostories.co.za. We will also put that email address in the show notes. You'll also find us on LinkedIn and Instagram. The two of two stories is the number. So do look us up and we can chat. A big thank you to all our voice note contributors. This podcast is a Two Stories production produced by Carol Williams, Brendan Cooper, Linda Scarborough, and Rebecca Funsale.